Emily Liddow.
And I'm Kyle Cacciadorian.
And you're listening to another episode of The Accessible Stall.
What are we going to talk about today, Emily?
We're going to talk about how great Carrie Wade is.
Who's that?
Carrie Wade?
Yeah.
She's right here.
Oh my
right
God, she is.
Here. She's here. Can you say hi, Carrie?
Hello.
See, we weren't making it up. She's for real.
I'm here.
You are guest number three on this show, which is pretty cool because we do play favorites.
Oh.
Now you've annoyed like
why was I not everyone if you play favorites?
Oh no. By play favorites we mean we have our favorite people on the show.
Perfect.
Just all of our favorite people.
You are definitely in our top three guests.
I am in fact the third. I'll take it.
Of the top three. But anyway, since you at home should all know who Carrie Wade is, can you please tell us about yourself, Carrie Wade?
Sure. I am a staff writer at autostraddle.com, which is an intersectional feminist website that caters to queer folks and our friends, basically. And I write a lot of stuff about disability over there. I have been writing a biweekly column called Queering Disability for a few months now, almost a year. And I actually just started a second series called Queer Crip Love Fest, where I talk to disabled queer folks about all the different kinds of love in their lives. So the first column is kind of a personal essay series, and the second is more of an interview series. So that means there is a steady stream of disability content on Autostraddle now, and I'm very happy to be part of that. I've written for a few other places and am hoping to write for many different publications in the future, but Autostraddle is very happily my home on the internet and where most people know me from nowadays.
I totally saw the Queer Crip Love Fest that you did with Annie Segarra, and she's also, did I say her last name right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, she's also great. She's a super awesome YouTuber who we should totally hunt down for the show. But hey, anyway, tangent. No, I really enjoyed that. I think you do such a good job of giving other people the spotlight while still maintaining your own.
Thank you. That's really great to hear. I mean, I try very hard to do that, especially as a white person and a person with a number of other privileges. I think that it's really important to amplify folks who are at different intersections than I will ever be able to understand. But I also do want to maintain my writing voice, you know, through all of my pieces so that you'll know it's me, even if it's, you know, me and another person talking. So it's great to hear that that's coming across. That's actually really good news to me.
See, I think you're sort of the epitome of what we've been trying to do lately with our series on building a better community.
Oh, mm-hmm. Is this another episode in that? I guess it can be.
It should be. We are trying to figure out how to make the disability community suck less. And not that we don't love the disability community, but there are certain parts of it that need to work on themselves.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what we are attempting to do. And I think that you kind of point to that with all of your writing, specifically making your writing accessible to everyone. So in spite of the fact that we're not queer, it's still
I was actually going to say that. I was like, you know, I know you from your writing, and as the resident straight white male here, mm-hmm. it's very easily accessible and understandable. And it's like, oh yeah, okay. Like it's probably like the best type of that writing I've read. And I'm not just saying that because you're here.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, I usually don't care about catering to straight white men, but I'm really glad to hear it.
Of course not, but like, you know,
that's awesome.
The messages aren't lost on somebody like me, which is, I guess, sort of a bridge that I don't know, I guess would be hard to cross, but you know. Can I just share a story about how I know you?
Yes.
By the way.
Absolutely.
I was waiting. I would have done this pre-show, but it's funnier this way.
Oh, good. Okay, I'm ready.
So Emily and my girlfriend Meg were at SDS in which state was it? Was it the first or second time?
You got to clarify your acronyms.
I don't actually know what it stands for. I'm a terrible disabled person. I don't know what it stands
for. Worst.
But sure, you were there.
Mm-hmm. In Atlanta.
And that's where you guys met Carrie. And I know who you are because they told me, oh my God, we met this girl who looks just like you. because we had a similar haircut.
That's amazing.
And ever since then, I've been wanting to like meet you and tell you that. So now it is my honor to share that really crazy, stupid story with you on this show.
No, oh, yes. You guys look so much alike.
No, actually, we actually kind of do right now.
We do. And yeah. I got to say, you have great hair, sir.
So
well
do you.
Done. Yeah,
you have
thank you.
Beautiful hair.
Guys, you also have similar palsy gaits, too.
Oh, do we? Excellent.
You sure do.
Well, then next time you're in New York, we must walk next to each other.
Absolutely. Confuse everybody around. It'll be great.
No, for they'll real.
We should also dress alike.
Yeah, they'll think we're related.
But you are definitely kind of, not definitely kind of, wow. You are definitely, in my mind anyway, the female version of Kyle, and Kyle is the male version of you.
That's thank excellent. You. Good.
So now that we have that out of the way, because that was really the only point of doing this whole podcast, was that we wanted you to know that you guys look exactly alike.
Right.
So back to building a better community. I would like to know what got you started with writing regularly for Auto Straddle, and how you feel that writing for a queer publication can still be applicable to the larger disability community.
Sure. Well, the first piece I wrote for Autostraddle was a few years ago, actually. It was about kink, like kinky sex. And it's really funny that that's the first thing that I ever published on the internet, because it was like, way to jump in the deep end, like right away. I really should have saved that for later in retrospect. But I wrote that a few years ago, and it kind of took off, and it established me in a few different circles. And, you know, I ended up being on like a lot of kink panels and stuff because of that, which was hilarious. And I felt very out of place in all of those situations. But then a year and a half later after that, Autostraddle put out a call for new writers. And so I applied, and I basically said, hey, remember me? I wrote this piece for you. And they came back and said, great, we would like to have you on as a contributor. And so for about 6 months, I did the Queering Disability series every other week. And it started as personal essays almost exclusively. And now that it's been going on for longer, it's sort of branched out into different types of articles. But then once my contributor time was up, they hired me on staff. And so that's how I got to where I am logistically with them. I chose Autostraddle because of the community around the site. I think that by and large, it's a very thoughtful, intersectional, engaged, and activist-oriented community. And there wasn't a ton of stuff about disability on the site when I first came across it. And so I was thinking, well, these are all really smart people. You know, they're already having a lot of really nuanced and personal conversations around bodies and sex and all the different ways that that can look and feel. And I think that disability stuff would fit right into that pocket. They just don't know it. And I think that that is the case with a lot of able-run activism, is that disability does belong there. They've just never had to think about it. And so you have a disabled person come along and be like, hey, you should also include us, which is sort of annoying because you shouldn't have to kind of poke them. You know what I mean? Like they should know on their own. But the fact is they usually don't. And that's just because, you know, there's a lot of disability erasure in activist spaces of every kind. And I thought it was important to make sure that Autostraddle wasn't part of the problem. So I knew that their community would be receptive to these kinds of conversations. So I decided to start them. And they have been great to me. Both the editors and the community have been wonderful. And I think that queer people are, by and large, I found very open to having conversations about bodies and what it means to have a non-normative bodily experience. So even if they are not disabled, and they don't know any other disabled people, or they don't know that they do, they're open to having the conversation. So I just tried to kind of get in there and exploit that as best I could. And it's worked out. It's great.
That was how I first discovered who you were, was through the Know Me Where It Hurts.
Oh, yeah. That's what you're talking about, right? I'm sorry. Yeah, that is the first thing I read about that you wrote. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the first thing that most people knew about me, which is pretty funny. It's like very personal. And I would get, you know, like I said, I would get asked to do these like kink panels and stuff, and people would sort of assume that I was a kink specialist, you know, like some kind of expert. And I'm like, no, that literally happened this one time. I like wrote about it. And I'd be like on panels with people who like do porn professionally, and, you know, they know so much more about sexual politics and stuff than I do. And I'm just like, I just wrote a piece about this one time that my ex wanted to try some new stuff in bed. And here I am.
That's actually kind of badass, though.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, I feel like I have so many things about sex and disability that I want to write, and I don't write them because...
Do it.
You should.
Do it. Write it on our site.
Yeah, I know, right? No, let's not deep dive into Emily's sex life right now, but, you know, it is good to see taboo subjects being talked about and acknowledging the fact that you need to have real conversations about disability in spaces other than the typical disability spaces. But on the flip side of that, and in regard to our building a better community theme, trademark, hashtag build a better community. I'm kidding.
Piles over it.
But for real, if we expect other minority spaces to recognize our existence, I think we could also stand to do a better job of recognizing the existence of minorities within the disability community.
For sure.
We're not good at that.
No. Well,
we're so bad at that.
Yeah.
Not like I want to beat up on the disability community.
No. Well, sometimes you need to, because we as a people like are really bad at that.
Yeah, it can get pretty insular.
Yeah, it happens, and I don't think it happens intentionally all the time, but I also really want people to realize that we need to get out of the same spaces that we're always in. We are always in these bubbles. And so people like you writing for a site that is not all disability all the time. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with being all disability all the time, but it's good to get out of that echo chamber.
No, yeah, I for sure. That's probably like the coolest thing about who you write for, in my opinion, because like I've never heard of that happening like anywhere else. Like that's I'm ignorant to the inner workings of the disability community, and I'm willing to admit that. So it probably has, but it's just cool to see a site that's not all disability all the time, like, have a columnist who talks about it and have it fit into what they do. Like, that's something that doesn't happen often enough, and the fact that you achieved it is really, really cool.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think that as much credit goes to Autostraddle and its editorial board, and, you know, I'm not saying this just because they pay me to write, which is an important note. I do actually get paid for this, and a lot of people do not pay their writers at all, let alone their disabled contributors. So I think that that's really important that they do that. But yeah, they were very open to me when I first approached them with ideas, and they've been very supportive and basically understanding that if you're going to have an intersectional activist conversation, which I think is where they have been, and now even more where they're going, you know, with Trump looming in the distance, you know, everybody kind of has a different job than we had on November 8th. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like every creative person has a different set of responsibilities now. And I think they have been very receptive to me personally, wanting to sort of push my own work in that direction. And they know that, you know, as they get their house in order to take on whatever's coming, that disability needs to be part of that conversation. And even, you know, articles that I'm not writing, sometimes when a contributor will send something into an editor that has a disability angle, they'll like run it by me to see what I think about it. And, you know, so it's really great. It's like exciting to be bringing disability politics into a space that wouldn't have necessarily gotten them, at least not for a while, you know?
How do you feel about the disabled body or living in a disabled body and having that automatically be a political act?
Stole my question, Emily.
What?
You stole my question.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
Hey, Kyle, would you like to ask that question?
No.
Go ahead. You ask it your way.
It's all right. I already forgot how you phrase it.
I think that you're right that it is automatically a political act. It is a little bit overwhelming and strange sometimes to think that nothing I do or don't do will ever be value neutral. There will always be some sort of extra value, extra bias, whatever, assigned to everything that I do and don't do. So like, you know, even a queer person, you know, having sex, let's say, right? Because that's what we were just talking about. Like, that's already something that kind of shocks and surprises a lot of people, although less now than like 10 years ago. But if you have a disabled queer person who's in a relationship or hooking up or doing whatever, all of a sudden it becomes this thing that people want to talk about all the time. And I am currently in a place where that's okay with me. You know, I actually kind of like the political elements because it means that I'll always have something to say and something to write about. But I can see how that may eventually become exhausting, you know, to have to constantly be like, okay, and take up kind of the education mantle. So, I mean, for now, it's great and I like it, but I also understand that that may get tiring. And also, like, it's only because of the other privileges that I enjoy that I am able to be like, oh, it's so fun to educate able-bodied people about this stuff. Like, you know, I'm only dealing with certain intersections at a time. And there's a lot that I don't have to personally contend with in my life that leaves energy for me to do those educational things. So I completely understand why a lot of folks aren't up for that or whatever for various reasons.
Kyle and I differ on this a lot, and we've been tearing each other down the whole time you've been talking.
No, but it's so funny because you are like the perfect middle ground between how we feel about that exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is really interesting.
Emily, what's your breakdown? Yeah.
Well, I know it's like we've said it before on the show. Like, it's a very popular thing when you're an activist to say, oh, it's not my job to educate you. And I understand that. I get where that's coming from. Of course it's not. But like when I'm faced with that in my day to day life, although it doesn't happen every day, which is something I'm sort of thankful for because it would get annoying pretty quick. I take my time to sort of let the person know, like, no, hey, like, this is how you, whatever it is, like, no, I don't need help. And no, I don't need you to, you know, if you help me anyway, that's actually rude and counterintuitive, or, you know, oh, actually, it's not your business how I have sex or something like that. I don't mind doing that. I you know, in my view, if I help one person, then that's me doing my job. Right. But Emily, I mean, I'll let her speak when I'm done ranting about this, but like, she and I differ sometimes, and we've butted heads, I think, more about this exact thing than anything else we've discussed on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is, I think, the weirdest spot where Kyle and I differ, because Kyle is like, I don't call myself an activist, but I don't mind educating you.
Well, I don't do that because of the baggage that I don't do that with many things. Like, I'm that guy who hates being called things. That's just right. I understand that, like, that, you know, eludes me of some.
You don't want to be labeled. I get that. You don't want to be labeled an activist, but you don't mind teachable moments, whereas I don't always want to be a breathing teachable moment.
And I understand that 100%, but it's just really weird how it, I don't know, you're just like perfectly in the middle. It's cool.
I like to have the privilege to choose. And I realize saying I like to have a privilege for something is there's probably something to unpack there, but I can enjoy the privilege to choose when my body is a teachable moment. So mm-hmm. kind of in the same way that you have the privilege of writing about what you want, when you want, and putting it out there if you feel like it, that is sort of how I go about my teachable moments.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because I don't always want to be a political act, but I also know that I am a political act every time I go out in public.
Yep. You kind of can't exist in public space without somebody ascribing something to you. And sometimes, you know, sometimes that's great, but sometimes it sucks. You know, sometimes it's a lot. And yeah, I mean, it's a really delicate balance that we all have to, I think we all have to figure out where we are on that spectrum of like, how much are we taking responsibility for? And I mean, I'm like, you know, I very actively have chosen to like write these columns and do this work, right? But I think that if I decided that I needed a break from this sort of writing, I don't think anybody would begrudge me that decision, you know? And I mean, I don't get called out every single day. It's kind of like you were saying, Kyle, like I don't have to confront it super actively every day. And I think that if I did, I would probably be singing a different tune. But for the time being, it's good. You know, I don't feel that I'm close to burnout, but I've really only been doing this work. You know, I've only been at AutoStraddle full time or as close to full time as a staff writer is, for about a year ish, maybe a little less. So, you know, there is a long road ahead and I might have a different opinion. You know, ask me again in a year, you know, I might be over it. Who knows?
We will.
Yeah. But for now, episode. I am not. Yep. And for now, I mean, I think not everybody has to or wants to take up the education cause, and that is completely valid for whatever reason. I am at a point in my life and my career where I'm happy to do that. So I am glad that it's reaching people in that way.
Activist burnout is definitely a real thing. And I know I've read some pretty great articles on taking care of yourself and also speaking up. But you mm-hmm. raised a really good point about how, you know, right now it's something you're not tired of, but you recognize the possibility that that could happen. And you say that no one would begrudge you if you stopped this kind of writing. But for me, and Kyle, I imagine you would feel differently about this, I am always pushing myself to be all things disability all the time, because I feel like if I don't uphold that, then I'm somehow letting down some invisible force. This mm-hmm. This sounds ridiculous coming out of my mouth.
But no, it doesn't.
It's just this feeling that I need to keep it up because this is what I established myself as. And if I want to indulge in more frivolous things or just stop and take a break for a while, that it would be somehow a negative reflection on me. Like Kyle and I have had a zillion conversations about how the Emily who is not constantly talking about disability is someone who would just be happy like writing about makeup all the time. But yeah, that seems super frivolous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, okay, for me,
in a bad way.
I hear you, but like, for me, like, my work up until just now has been all disability, and I made it a point to get away from it in order to prove to myself that I wasn't a one-trick pony, though. So I really get what you're saying, and I sort of by being where I am right now, I don't want to say I totally proved it to myself that I could do more than disability because it's only one job, but it was a nice sort of tell that maybe this isn't all I'm chalked up to be, because, you know, for me, it was just a little weird to not that I didn't love the disability related work that I did. It's just that I had this bit of an existential crisis where it's like, well, did you hire me because I'm good at this, or did you hire me because I was born this way and have a, you know, lens on life that you don't? And that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, being tokenized for money is one of my specialties.
I don't. A lot of disabled people, or a lot of people in our community, like, hate that. I really don't. I love it. It's my.
I love it too.
And I want to high five you so bad right now. No, for real, like, it's my favorite thing. But it got to me, like, on a primal level where I was like, is this all I really am? Like, is this all you see when you look at me? So I had to leave for a while. And I'm not going to say I don't miss it, but there is a relief that I feel that I didn't really realize was relief until I got completely away for a while.
Yeah.
And so I totally get your point, Emily, but that's why you should write about frivolous things every once in a while, because it feels good, man.
I know. Well, that's why I've sort of come to this compromise with myself where I just ordered a whole bunch of lipstick and posted a picture of it on Instagram, because everyone just needs to not ask me about disability and let me enjoy my pink lipstick.
Damn right they do. I mean,
enjoy your pink lipstick.
You know, it's like kind of what you were saying before about the fact that I write on a site that is not disability specific. I think that I do have a certain privilege of being able to sort of cross over into AutoStraddle's other areas of interest if I need a brain break. You know, if I want to, like, do something else, there is, like, a full buffet of other topics that they cover that I can just sort of jump into when I want to. So I think it seems easier to me to do that because I'm working in a place that already offers those opportunities. But I completely get the wanting to stay with what you've established, you know, the writing voice that you've established for yourself. Like, it's funny. The first time I ever wrote something for AutoStraddle that wasn't a disability related thing, it was a recipe list. Like, we do these biweekly food lists, and the potato thing was the very first thing. And I got a bunch of text messages and emails from, like, disability activist people who were like, what is this potato business? Like, why are you writing this? And I was like, because they asked me to. I don't know. Like, I work there, you know? So it was weird for other people to see me doing something else. But I think that, you know, I think that disability will always be an angle that I bring to my creative work. But I also think, and I want that, I embrace that actively. I'm not trying to distance myself from it in any way. And I sort of get offended when people suggest that I should. But I think that to build a career as a writer, I do want to be able to reach out into different areas. Ideally, to bring disability into those areas, kind of like what I've done at AutoStraddle thus far. But even if it's not disability related, good writing is good writing. So if people want to hire me to write something because they like the way that I write, I'm not going to say no just because it's not a disability piece, you know?
Yeah, it always is a nice thing to be recognized for an ability to write rather than just, you know, an ability to talk about disability incessantly. But at the same time, I can't get too mad at being known for writing about disability because I am trying to change people's minds and perspectives about disability. So if you're going to know me for something, I'm glad it's that. And also, that's how I connected with you anyway, because I remember getting an email from you before SDS saying, hi, I'm Carrie, and I don't know if you know me, and maybe this is weird or something like that, but you want a room together?
Yeah, I remember that. That was so funny. I needed friends. I didn't know anyone.
But of course I was rooming with who is now Kyle's girlfriend, Meg.
That's so cute, by the way. I'm really into that. Anyway, continue.
But I remember getting that email and being like, here's this really cool person who wrote this really great article, because I had shared your article on this roundup of links that I used to do.
And I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, I love her writing and she knows who I am. This is really cool. So sometimes being known for disability stuff is not all bad.
No, I think it's great.
You opened your mouth like you were going to say something.
Does it put pressure on you? I'm talking to Emily. I'm asking Emily this question. Does it put pressure on you, though? Like, if you decided tomorrow to write something about anything, do you think you'd get an influx of emails and text messages from your activist friends are like, what the hell are you doing?
It depends what it is.
Well, I guess it's a better question for Carrie. Like, when you, I haven't read the potato thing, but.
You should read the potato thing.
I'm going to, of course. I got to read everything she's written now. But do you feel pressured by people within the community when you don't write about disability?
Not to the point that it affects my choices. Okay. I mean, it was definitely, you know, people were surprised to see something else, you know, but I think, you know, I'm a staff writer at a website. If they want me to write something, being on staff means that you're going to get all sorts of different assignments, you know, so it's nice to be able to flex different muscles. And, you know, it's not like writing the potato thing or like any of the other stuff. You know, I've done a couple of different articles about magazines and, you know, things like that. It's not like any of those things has alienated the people that are reading my disability stuff. So I've sort of been able to walk that fine line. And the only time I've ever been able to walk a fine line in my life, because cerebral palsy makes that very hard. I've been able to do that without much trouble. And, you know, I think that that's a function of my position at Autostraddle, and also just, you know, the vast majority of the things that I put out for them are disability related. So maybe it would be different if the balance was different. But for now, it doesn't, you know, I know, and everyone else who reads anything that I write knows, that I'll be back to disability stuff sooner or later. So, you know, none of that input has really affected my decisions about what to write.
So I'm thinking I might need to also try writing something about potatoes and see what
happens. See what happens.
Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely have thought about branching out. But then I've also, I guess this is the flip side. I don't know. It's somewhat correlated. If I have not produced something for a while, I feel like a slacker.
Oh, so, for sure. Yeah.
Whereas you're a staff writer, so you stick to a schedule. And I used to have a biweekly column for the Center for Disability Rights, and I did that for a year. And this constant stream of producing became so immensely exhausting, to the point where I was like, do I just need to make up something about discrimination that happened to me so I can write about it so that I can have an article topic?
Did you do that?
Never.
Oh, no. God.
That's unethical. Never. But yeah, I know. I get it.
I would never ever do that. But that
horrified me for a second.
No, but do you know, I'm talking about it more as a feeling and a sentiment, not as a something I actually did.
No, yes. I understand, but I just, for a minute, you really caught me off guard.
Yeah, no, I realized how I said that was like, woo, but no, I would sit there and I would be like, oh my God, I feel like I just need to manufacture an instance of something so that I can just get this article out there. But I mean, the good and or bad thing about disability, however you may look at it, is that something always came up on its own.
Yep. That's the thing, right? Sure. I mean, I'm dealing with that very same feeling right now, like as we speak. And that's kind of why the original series that I did for Autostraddle and I'm still doing is, it used to be all personal essays, and now it's sort of become disability related articles of various types. And that was why, like, I sort of at some point reached the end of what I felt like I could write essays about at that moment. And I like took it in another direction because I had deadlines to meet. So I completely get that. And that's especially been a thing for me since the election. I haven't really written any big personal essays since the election because I've just felt depleted, I think, as a lot of people have by that experience. And so I completely understand. And I know that I have to get back on that horse and I know I want to, but it can be hard to sort of drum up that stuff, even though, like you were saying, you know, things randomly happen of their own accord all the time. And you're like, oh, right, ableism is real. So I'll always have something to say.
Yeah. You know? It is one of those things that comes in handy and is also the most annoying thing in the world. Like, it's great. It's great if you're a writer or a podcaster, and it's also terrible. But yep. Especially after the election, I felt this pressure on myself, which is ridiculous. And it was a purely internal thing where I was like, now more than ever would be a good time to use my writing voice to write something about disability and Trump. So I had pages and pages and pages in my notebook of an article that I kept planning to put together and then pitch. And I was just feeling so out of words at what should have been a critical moment to be talking about it. Mm-hmm. But I had written enough that BuzzFeed ended up saving the day by coming to me and being like, hey, do you want to be part of a compilation piece? And I was like,
oh, right. Yeah, I saw that. That was a great piece.
Yeah, they did such a good job of curating it and putting it together and getting, you know, really diverse perspectives. And I was just relieved to be involved, honestly, because it took the pressure off of just me trying to say something profound. And it's not like anyone was sitting there being like, oh, is Emily going to say something profound about the election? It was more like, I feel like the least I can do as a disability activist is put my voice forward for the greater good in this particular pivotal moment.
Right. Totally.
But we kind of sorted that all out through the podcast instead.
Yeah. Right.
It's easier to talk than to write.
That is true.
It's so true. Yep. Solid.
But I appreciate what you do, Carrie, and how you are bringing something fun to the conversation around disability, because that's another thing.
Yeah, like, it's a good point, actually. We're no fun as a people. No, I mean, it's a bad thing to say, but it's nice to, you know, hear something different. And you know, I don't know, it's just a rare thing to come by in our world.
Well, thank you. I mean, and that's great to hear, because I do try really hard as part of the general accessibility of the things that I'm writing to sort of put everything in a conversational tone and, you know, make sure that I am sort of, you know, it's like when people sneak vegetables into smoothies or whatever. I try to do that where it's like, this isn't just a fluff piece, or this isn't just me like putting together like a funny flow chart about what it's like to try to have sex as a disabled person or whatever.
That flow chart was amazing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that flow chart was like the most legit thing I've ever seen. It was awesome.
Thank you.
It was great.
Yeah, I mean, it's things like that it's funny and fun. And, you know, that didn't take very long to put together because it just made me laugh the whole time. But there's a real lesson there. You know, if you go and look at that, it's like, oh, this is a commentary on, you know, sexual exclusivity among able-bodied people and how hard it is to sort of break into that environment and whatever, you know. So just trying to like put a spin on things that people want to read and will make them laugh while also, you know, dropping some truth bombs is sort of what I'm aiming for. So I'm glad that that is happening.
Yeah, especially because I am recording this after just getting home from a date.
That's right.
Yeah. So good.
Oh,
I think.
Excellent.
I think it was good.
Hey, Emily. Yes. Mute your microphone on Skype. You unmuted it.
I did. Echoing. Oh, no.
It's all right. Don't worry. Sorry.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Wait, am I still echoing?
No, you had it and then you undid it again.
Did I fix it?
No. There you go.
Yes.
Oh, you're still echoing.
I'm trying to talk about my date and you're ruining everything.
Sorry, you kind of sound like Darth Vader.
Cool.
It's great.
I like Darth Vader. I don't know why I'm echoing, but yeah, went on a date. It was pretty cool. It was with a non-disabled guy. I was like stressed out about that. Mm-hmm. But I would like to write about that more without breaking the anonymity of the random guys who are subjected to my storytelling. Mm-hmm. After I go on dates with them, I seriously want to be more open to writing about that, sort of in the same way that you've shared personal sex and relationship experiences through your writing. That is something I aspire to. I just got to pull it out of me.
I would definitely read that if you wrote it. So let that be the motivation you asked for.
Yes, do it, Emily.
Right? Thank you, yeah. Kyle.
Also, if we ever do a follow-up to our sex and relationships episode that we did when we were just a little... It was our time. It was like our third episode ever. Yeah.
Yeah, you were we at that point. Yes.
We should have Carrie on again.
I would like to talk more thoroughly about sex and disability because, quite honestly, when we attempted it the last time, I'm not sure we actually said anything about sex.
It was so vague. It was terrible.
I've done that a bunch of times. I've like gone awful on sex shows and just ended up talking about ableism with people for an hour. Like it doesn't. It's weird. Yeah.
But it's all interrelated. But yeah, no, we got to do better about actually talking about sex. But it's also hard because I don't really mind sharing my experiences so much, but I don't really want to incriminate anyone else.
For sure. Yeah.
I don't care.
Well, good. At least one out of the three of us is like, eh.
Yeah, we're fine. Yeah. No, but I once wrote a piece about the worst date I have ever been on. And people figured out who it was about, even though I put no identifying details. Like, someone knew that I had gone on a date who told someone else. And then it got back to that guy. And he was so livid that I wrote the article. And for a minute, I felt bad. And then I was like, nah, you were a jerk. You deserved it.
He sucked.
Mm-hmm. But, like... It's hard because I want to put my life out there in the hopes that it'll resonate with someone, but I also don't want it to come back to bite me in the butt.
Sure. I mean, and that's like a risk among all writers who write about anything personal, right? It's such a delicate thing. And you really have to figure out what your personal boundaries are. That's been something that I've had to negotiate also. Like that kink piece, the only reason that I could write it was that that girl and I hadn't been together for like 2 years at that point. You know, it was long done and I had a lot of perspective on it and it wasn't something where, you know, I'm much more hesitant to share those sorts of details about my current relationship that I'm in right now because that's ongoing and it's a living thing and I want to, you know, protect that and it's important to me. But your ex that you've been broken up with for 2 years, it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm not particularly concerned about how this is going to affect our relationship because we no longer have one anyway. And
yeah, so that's why I guess I shouldn't worry so much about writing about failed dates or past experiences. So, yeah,
but I get that. I mean, it's tricky, especially like you said, like, everybody, you know, with the internet especially, people can always figure out who you're talking about somehow.
Oh, yeah. And I have like 5 million things I want to write about my ex who was my first serious boyfriend. And I was with him for 2 years and we've been broken up since 2013. So you would think that by 2017, I should be able to write about him. But the problem is that every single person in the disability community, I feel like seems to know him somehow.
You've also said his name on the show. So if you write,
probably, yeah. Hi, Steven. What's up, Steven?
Oh, come on. Don't do it now. Now you really can't.
Doing it now. Oh, please. Like, he's listening to this?
He might. You never know.
Yeah, he's with his girlfriend and their two stupid cats. I'm not bitter.
Stupid.
I'm not bitter. I'm not.
I often wonder if the woman in that essay of mine has read it. I'm 95% sure that she has, but I'm also really happy that I can't definitively say for sure whether she has or not. I feel like that's the perfect balance because you're like, well, it's out there and we know enough people in common and you're, you know, as a fellow queer person, like, you know enough people who are affiliated with Autostraddle and its attendant communities that you've probably seen this. But the best part of all is that I don't know because you've never contacted me about it, you know? So I think that's like the sweet spot of like, probably, but I've never had to deal with it personally. So I think that's the difference.
Yeah. And I always wondered if my ex had seen some of the stuff that I'd written because he does factor into certain things that I've written or talked about. But for a while, I had him blocked on Facebook. And to be quite honest, I just unblocked him like a month or so ago, and I was like, if Donald Trump can win the election, I can say hi to you. That was literally what I said to him. That's like, if the world is ending anyway, hi, how you doing?
Hello. Let's make this right.
So, I wouldn't even say we like made it right, but now he has potential access to things that I do and say. But it's also been 3+ years, so he can deal with it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the statute of limitations is up.
I was on another sex and disability podcast where I went really into a lot. You made a good point, Carrie. Like, I wonder if the people involved in those stories have listened to. I doubt it.
I have a great idea. I'm going to get the link and send it to all your ex-girlfriends.
Please don't do that. That would be the worst thing ever.
It's like a game to figure out which story is about you.
Well, the best part is that I know all of Kyle's sex stories, so...
This is great now. This is fun.
So I could I could just play match the girl to the story.
Nice.
Dude, you make me sound like such a word I don't want to bleep because...
He's not. Don't worry, ladies. He's perfectly monogamous. Yeah. Anyway, this guy...
There's nothing wrong with a little polyamory.
There you go.
There's nothing wrong with it.
But only if it's mutually decided.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's
ethical
not for me.
Non-monogamy, as they say.
Yes.
Is that what it's actually called? That's mm-hmm. really like, that sounds like legalese.
Yeah.
I like that.
Ethical non-monogamy.
There you go.
I like that actually a lot better. That's kind of cool.
Then what?
Dispatches from the queer community.
We learned a thing.
Yep. There's our terminology. You're welcome.
Word of the day. No, anyway. Phrase of the day. Wow, we got so off the rails. How do we do this every time?
We're just terrible at ending things. My final takeaway is I learned the correct way to refer to polyamory. That was cool.
My final takeaway is that Carrie is super great and you should read all her work, which we're going to link.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you, guys.
Of course.
This was fun. I'm just going to tell everyone who's listening that we had absolutely no idea what we were going to talk about when we started. But I think some of our best conversations come out of that.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a conversation, right? So you just kind of have to let it go where it's going to go. And that's great.
Well, a lot of people have said that when they listen to us, they have a conversation back with us and they'll talk to the podcast. So that's what we're trying to do here is just let people know that they're not alone in all of those inner monologues that they've had with themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's on that note.
There's a bunch of ethically non-monogamous people out there who are like, hey, that's me.
Raise your hand if you're ethically non-monogamous.
We can't see them, but we know they're there.
We know you're there, guys.
And we recognize you and respect your existence because we love everyone on this podcast.
Yep.
Is that a cheesy enough note to end it on?
I mean, I'm sure we could get worse, but yes.
But anyway, for real, thank you for being with us, Carrie.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was awesome. And I love all of the work that you both do. So this has been a real treat.
Love Fest.
I'm blushing.
He is. And can you tell us and our 8 million listeners, that was an approximation, where they can find you on the interwebs?
Sure. So I am on Twitter and Instagram at Wade Theory. So like my last name and then theory, like music theory or string theory. And I am also, if you go to autostraddle.com and search for Carrie, my author page will come up and that will bring you to every article that I've written about disability stuff and potatoes and everything in between.
And Hillary Clinton. Woo!
And Hillary Clinton. There's Hillary a lot Clinton of Hillary
Clinton. Is definitely stuff. In between disability and potatoes.
Yeah, it's a solid middle ground.
I'm going to end it right there.
Yep.
Right there. Okay. And that was another episode of The Accessible Stall.
Bye.
Bye.